We're here because we don't buy into the bullshit of mainstream culture. We're tired of the mundane, passionless careers we've been shuffled into as a result of this orchestrated debt-based system of rule, and the stranglehold on education and entertainment by cold, soulless corporations. People, yes, we are frustrated. Yes, we are tired. And we reject the pre-approved tranquilizers that are Monday Night Football and an ice-cold Budweiser. But we have to stop hiding. Stop hiding behind the headphones and the Cherry Popper 420 username. Let the world see that the resistance is strong and society is changing. There was a time to be anonymous, but that time has passed. And so the Higher Side Chats would like to present Conspiracies as the dawning of this new paradigm in the uniform of the revolution. Because bold fashion should mean more than some celebrity meat dresser frat boy in a silly pink polo. Conspiracies redefines bold fashion as having the balls to reject socially uncomfortable and unpopular truths from your radiant chest all fucking day. Conspiracies.net. Let them know that you know. Bold designs for troubled times. Hard truths. Soft cock.
In the 1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of fire. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Higher Side Chats.
Hello, party people. Welcome to the Higher Side Chats. May your day be laxed and your bowls be packed. Drinking a little drink and smoking a little smoke from San Diego, I'm Greg Carlwood. Right now, it's 10 a.m. on 1010, and the stars seem to have aligned to bring us a prominent truth blogger and author, Shander Blessman, the sacred scribe of ShanderBlessman.com. His article has been picked up and featured on the websites of ABC, Jeff Rentz, and Alex Jones, and now the Higher Side Chats has picked up and featured the man himself. Shander Blessman, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing really great, Greg.
Thanks for being here. You've written a lot of great articles that hit on some of the major spokes of the conspiracy wagon wheel heading down the Oregon Trail of 2012, mainly the flu vaccine, fluoride, the corrupt and manipulative media, to mention a few. And, you know, whenever I meet someone knowledgeable about these topics, I like to ask them, where was your major break from the mainstream, and what was the lie that sent you down the rabbit hole?
Oh, wow. That's actually going back in time quite a bit. I kind of started to, you know, wake up or have these little glimmers back when I was about 20 years old.
Wow.
In 1980... there was, and I'm talking politics, in terms of politics. Mm-hmm. In 1980, there was a gentleman named Anderson. I forget his first name, but he was running as an independent for president. And this was the year that one of the years that Ronald Reagan was, you know, huge. And I was actually stomping for Anderson and voted for him. I was one of the, like, 2 or 3% that actually thought, hey, maybe we could change the world by getting rid of these Democrats and Republicans and right. And getting somebody independent in there. And, of course, he didn't win. But that kind of started my journey. I think the real break, the thing that really made me start questioning the reality that they were feeding us was the Waco affair. My little brother was telling me that the military, the police had started that fire. And I was telling him, I was determined that it wasn't the police that had done it, that the police weren't bad, mm-hmm. that the people inside the Waco compound had started that themselves. And he gave me a film to watch. And for the longest time, I refused to watch it. I got mad at him. So then one day I finally said, you know what, I'm going to watch that film and I'm going to prove to him that he's wrong. And I watched that film and it showed me that he was the one that was right. And I had to apologize to my little brother for getting so angry. And I think that's what really started things for me.
Nice. I mean, that's a common thread that a lot of people, when they start down the path, they initially are trying to defend the government and the leaders. And then they just find, once they really dig into the evidence, they get past that first layer of propaganda. They see man, this is crazy. I can't defend this kind of stuff.
It was like taking the red pill. And once you know the truth, once you admit that you know the truth, I think a lot of people know the truth, but they just won't admit it.
It's overwhelming.
Right. They won't see it for themselves. They refuse to believe it. They refuse to believe that their dad or their mom is bad. And, you know, by that, I mean mommy government, daddy government. Mm-hmm. You know, they want these people to be good. They want these people to be taking care of them. And I don't blame them. I can understand that. We all want to be coddled and loved. And, you know, it's a good feeling. But when it ain't happening, and you need to admit it, and you need to grow up.
And, right.
You know, just admit that these people are bad, admit that they're corrupt, and try to look for somebody who isn't. Try to find a different relationship.
I agree. Let's talk a bit about the Waco situation, because I hear a lot of people of a slightly older generation than my own talk about that being their pivotal moment. And, you know, I've heard a little bit about it, but tell the people what exactly happened at Waco.
Well, Waco was a standoff with the FBI and the ATF for a long time. And what they did was they went into a religious compound.
Mm-hmm.
They went up there looking for guns. And I, you know what? Refresh my memory. I forget the leader's name.
Oh, man. David Koresh?
David Koresh. Yeah, that was it. And they went up looking for illegal weapons, and they had a raid all planned. And it fell apart because there was a bunch of people in there with guns, and they started shooting back. They were defending themselves. And naturally, once that happened, the FBI couldn't let people think that, hey, these people were just defending themselves against us. Mm-hmm. They had to justify their actions. So they surrounded the house, and they seized it for about a month, 6 weeks, I think. And then one day they went in there with a tank, and they started it on fire, and they killed all these little kids. They killed women, and they just didn't care. And I used to think, no, they tried to save their lives. They were the mm-hmm. good guys. They were, you know, this David Koresh guy was crazy. There was no excuse. There was no excuse whatsoever for what these government people did. And once you figured that out, it was just disgusting. And if you're out there and you still think that the government did the right thing there, consider that they knew Koresh's routine, and they could have at any time gone up to him while he was walking down the road, because he used to walk every day or at least once a week, and they could have gone up there and arrested him right then and there. They didn't have to surround his compound. They didn't have to deal with anybody else there at all.
And, well, what was it that they were doing there that got the government's attention?
That I'm not sure of. Illegal weapons. That's right. All I know. It's the same with Ruby Ridge. They suspected them of illegal weapons dealing. And
you just go in there and you crack down.
As a conspiracy theorist, I think that at the time they were trying to, really crack down on gun ownership and take guns away from everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that they were going to use these people, the Koreshes and the people from Ruby Ridge, as examples. And it all backfired on them. You know, one can only wonder if they had been competent enough to actually make the arrests and make these guys look like bad, illegal people that threatened the lives of innocents. Mm-hmm. Maybe we might be in a different, you know, they might have actually taken a step forward and been able to take more guns off the street and kind of disarm the American people more than they have already. But because they fucked up,
yeah.
they really shot themselves in the foot.
No pun intended.
No pun intended.
I mean, it does seem to be the most common thing that the part of the programming that does break down is people seem to be pretty attached to their guns. And it's a weird thing because, you know, people cite the Constitution, and then it's like the government puts forth all this like happy American propaganda, like proud to be an American. And, you know, people take that to heart. And that part of that includes the right to bear arms. So when you come back on the opposite end and say, you know, everything we're founded on is great, but we got to take those guns away, people just, they kind of, a switch goes off and they like hunker down, you know?
Yeah, well, that's a tough part that the government has. It's the same with free speech. I think the first two amendments are really something that the American people kind of, you know, they're jolted to awakeness. They're all of a sudden, you know, the other rights, the right to own your own property and stuff like that, let them have that as long as they keep us secure. But when it comes to free speech and when it comes to taking guns away and religion, it really seems that the government is having a tough time.
Yeah, I mean, it's good that the programming breaks down somewhere, but I just wish it was a lot earlier than that far down the line. But you know,
it's hard to break the indoctrination of the schools, the school system. You know, when you have to stand, when I was growing up, I had to stand up every day and put my hand over my heart and say, "I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America."
Me too.
It's really hard to break through that kind of indoctrination. And the state owns the schools. You can't send your kid you're already paying for the school because you're paying the property taxes. So if you want to send your kid to another a private school, it's going to cost you a whole heck of a lot more. And then the private schools are now getting more and more public. They're taking more and more public money. Mm-hmm. And it's really, really difficult to send your kid to a school where they can teach them how to think critically and how to think in terms that's not statist. So,
right. The whole school system itself is a big conspiracy that, you know, the Department of Education was actually funded by the Rockefellers and a bunch of large multinational corporations who in turn put forth a system that was just going to teach people how to be good workers. And, right. You know, I hear all the time kids in school saying, when am I ever going to use this? And it's like, well, you're using it right now because what you're learning is that you go somewhere you don't want to be for 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. You respond to the bells, you clock out for lunch, and then you get to go home.
Yeah.
And from the age of 5 to 21, you're learning that 8 hours of your day belongs to, you know, you might say the greater good, but it's really just private corporations.
Well, that is so true. And people forget that public schools is the 10th plank of the Communist Manifesto. So you didn't know that?
No.
Read the Communist Manifesto. It's it'll open up your eyes especially if you can read it from the point of view that you're at right now. The fifth plank is to have the central bank.
All right, yeah, and that's a huge problem in itself.
Right.
That's probably the whole origins of the great conspiracy is that, you know, some people instituted a currency and convinced us that it was all worth working for.
Yes, right. And then the first four planks are all about taxation and how you don't get to have private property, that it all belongs to the state. But then you got to ask yourself, well, who's the state? I mean, and these would be the top guys. And you mean they get all the property? That sounds like a king to me.
Right.
So it's really just, communism is really just feudalism.
Yeah, you know, they're all built on each other. I mean, I'm kind of feel like we've never really experienced a lot of these government structures because a monetary system is still at its base, always. And that in itself kind of throws a wrench in any type of system because, I mean, that's the greatest bit of programming, I think, is, again, that you have to work for the money. You know, communism is supposed to be everyone shares, but the principle of scarcity is always still put right in the middle of it, you know, assumed scarcity.
And then, you know, Americans did have a different system at the beginning. I shouldn't say at the beginning because they did have the First National Bank. But once Jackson got in there and crushed the second national bank, Americans had their own money. The dollar, for instance, is defined as about an ounce of silver. There's an exact measurement, 0.99 mm-hmm. That was it is actually still is law. So the dollars that we use from the FRNs are actually truly lawfully not real dollars. Mm-hmm. The real dollar is supposed to be a measure of silver. And when you tell people this, their eyes just kind of glaze over, and they really don't get it. They don't have that understanding that the money that we use is what keeps us free. When you're using a debt-based money, you go into debt. When you're indebted, you're no longer free because you owe somebody a portion of your basically of your labor or of something that you produce.
Mm-hmm.
So you are not free because you're under the heel of the person that you owe. So in the long run, we're all under the heel of the Federal Reserve.
Exactly. Well, you know, one of the pieces you wrote that actually got a lot of attention that I really liked was actually about the flu vaccine. I mean, this is an area of great concern to me because I have friends that are in med school and they say I'm crazy for being skeptical and I'm ignorant to the science behind it. You know, and that part's true, but they're ignorant to the planned and calculated attacks on humanity by the hidden hand behind global politics. But I get very skeptical of anything that has such an aggressive chorus line of support through society, and in some cases becomes even mandatory.
Right.
The question is this part of the plan to keep us down, or am I just looking at something that isn't there? What do you think?
Well, okay. I wrote that piece because of the mandatory nature of what they were doing with the flu vaccine was they were making it mandatory, or they were trying. They were doing their best to make it mandatory. And I don't trust the government, and I don't want the flu vaccine. For me, the flu vaccine got me sick.
Right.
So, you know, it's an individual thing. And you can tell me, no, that wasn't the case, all you want. I'm saying, look, I've taken it. I got sick. I know what happened. You don't. You weren't sitting there in bed with me while I was shaking and shivering and couldn't get up and had this headache and muscle aches everywhere. And it was terrible. It was awful. And I didn't want to go through that again. So I don't want to take these shots. I don't trust them.
Right.
So, you know, if I want to take my chances getting the flu through natural means, why should you be so concerned about me? You go ahead and have your shot. I don't care. You want a shot? Take it. Have all the shots you want. In fact, there's a guy I talk to every once in a while at the bar, and I saw him going into Walgreens for his flu shot. And I asked him about it. He says, hey, I've never got sick. So there you go. He's had good results. Now, when I start looking into the adjuvants, the mercury, the squalene, the occurrences of autism after after the shots and stuff like that, I say, you know, this needs to be studied more. It at least needs to be studied more. And no, it should never be mandatory. People should not be forced to put things into their body that they don't like.
Right. And I mean, I think about this a lot because I'm not sure if when I have kids, if I want to get them vaccinated. It's a scary thing because I'd hate myself if they got sick and died because of it. And then people like my med school friends say I'm actually putting society at risk by not vaccinating, bringing it back. It seems that way. But I'd feel even shittier if my kid developed autism because I let some asshole inject my newborn with, you know, traces of a virus. That's essentially what vaccines are.
Right.
But it's tough. You know, did you vaccinate your kids? I know you have a couple.
I didn't have much of a choice because it's not just me. There's my wife too.
Mm-hmm,
and keep peace in the family. The one thing that I did do that I actually regret doing is I had my son circumcised, and yeah. I wish I hadn't done that.
Me and my girlfriend debate that very issue all the time.
No, well, see, that's the thing, is my wife at the time would have agreed to not have him circumcised. She thought that that was a bad thing to do, and so I wish I had listened to her.
Yeah, it's like, do we really think chopping the dicks off infants and injecting them with needles is the best way to bring them into this world? It's exactly. The first thing we do.
Exactly. And, you know, that's violent. And so we're teaching them violence even before they can grab hold of anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a terrible thing to do. And, yeah, I wish I hadn't done that, but I did, and he's forgiven me for it, so...
Why would you opt out of circumcision?
Because it's not necessary. I actually understand the reasons. I have a friend whose son isn't circumcised, and he actually had to show his son how to take care of the foreskin so that it doesn't become dry and brittle and kind of break and stuff. And I can understand where that can be embarrassing and everything like that. So mm-hmm. circumcision kind of makes it so that you don't have to go through that. But on the other hand, you're kind of bonding a little bit, I suppose. Kind right. of a strange thing to talk about, but.
Well, I just think that, I mean, her argument is, and she's wise to a lot of things, but her argument is really just cosmetic. She just thinks that. Cosmetically, if you don't have it done, you're gonna be the odd man out, the weird one in a society where your sexuality is already such a taboo subject. Now you're the one with the weird dick. When in reality, yours is the only natural dick right. around. But you know, she just thinks it's cosmetic. I say, well, what if I thought that vaginas looked better without clitorises? Should I just be chopping all those off? You know, for everybody.
Yep. And you know what? That's how Muslims look at it. So if you're going to look at cosmetic things, you know, that's just not right.
Right.
And if she's worried about the look, she can look on PornTube a little bit. I'm sure she can find men without circumcisions on the
YouTube. I mean, she's got one, but, you know, she worries well, about go. The kid.
There you go. No. Don't let her do it. It's barbaric. It's a barbaric practice, and it should be stopped.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's time to stop. And really, I don't, I mean, like you said, she's got a man. So, I mean, is she happy with you?
Yeah.
Is she saying that you should get a circumcision because you look funny?
No. I mean, she's got one that's circumcised, and that's her thing. Is she just cosmetically, she thinks that if your kid is in high school, girls are going to go around being like, you know, he's got that kid's got the weird dick. And well,
then,
it may
then
happen.
I think that would make him more popular with the girls because they're all going to want to see it.
Yeah.
Now they're going to be curious.
It is a weird thing. It's a barbaric thing. I mean, I think in my family it was probably done at the time for just as a religious ritual, which is also ridiculous. But I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to cave in on that or not. But
are you Jewish?
No, Catholic.
Catholic? Okay. Me too.
I mean, I'm not anything, and I don't think neither of my parents are anymore either, but I mean, I guess we were all just playing along for my childhood.
I had a sister who became Jewish so that she could marry her husband, who was Jewish, and I went to the circumcisions of her children where they do it for everybody to see. It's kind of a strange thing, but
well, you bring up
it is what it is.
And it is also a Jewish practice as well, but in the Jewish religion, I've seen some weird stuff that the I guess it's a moel who does the procedure.
Yeah.
There is a ritual where the moel removes the foreskin with his mouth.
Ew.
And it's
well,
pretty common.
They didn't do that one.
I mean, I won't say it's common today, but you can still see pictures of real traditionalists where the moel is. I keep saying that like I'm pretty sure that's what it is.
It is a moel, yeah.
Cool.
That's what they call it.
But he takes it off with his mouth, and you can find pictures of it online. And
I don't think I want to see that.
That's, right. I mean,
it's one of those things, and they couldn't. I don't think they could do that in the United States. They'd get arrested.
I'm not sure if they do or not. I think they do it here. I mean, I'm not sure, but yeah. The point is, if he wasn't a religious leader and this wasn't a religious ritual, you know, I'd be in jail for having that picture on my computer.
Right, right.
But instead, it's done in a public forum.
Right. I don't think I'd have that on my computer anyway.
Man, you don't want to see my computer. But another conspiracy that's in the public health sector that you've written about is fluoride in the water supply. And
yes.
The thing I always say about the situation is, where else in society do you see government putting an extra effort on that sort of scale to make everyone healthy? And I mean, why teeth? Why not just pump in natural vitamins?
Well, the thing that got me that really opened my eyes to fluoride in the water is the fact that the Germans used it in their concentration camps
right.
to keep the prisoners
docile.
Yeah, docile. So you're going, well, wait a minute. You know, and then you're telling me it's because it's good for teeth.
Right.
And, you know, they talk about the bags that they have that they put into the water supply where it says, you know, oh, it's poison. And it's in rat poison? Come on.
Right.
What kind of lies are you feeding me? And so it's just lie upon lie upon lie. And if you, it's always follow the money. If you trace it back, it's always some way to make money. Mm-hmm. The fluoride was in the water because certain businesses didn't want to have to dispose of it.
Yeah. It's a byproduct of certain, processes, right?
Right. I think, atomic processes. So mm-hmm. this is coming in after World War II. When you're making, when the nuclear power industry is just in fledgling years, and you've got all these processes to make the nuclear bomb. And, you know, it wasn't that, 70 years ago wasn't really that long ago. People might think, oh, yeah, that was forever back, but it wasn't. And in the town that I lived in West Chicago for years, I lived there for 20 years. There was this stuff called thorium. It was the byproduct of Kerr-McGee Corporation, which was a huge corporation, still is. And they were working with the Department of Defense to help create the atom bomb. They were part of the Manhattan Project, which, mm-hmm. by the way, was when people talk about conspiracies, oh, if there was that many people involved, we'd know. The Manhattan Project had like 100,000 people involved, and nobody knew about it until those bombs went off in Japan.
Right. Great point.
You know, the general public was kept unaware of what was going on right under their feet. And, you know, so the people in Chicago, in the Chicago area, had they knew they were part of something big, but they didn't know exactly what it was. You know, some of them did. But most of them were just, I am going to work for the Department of Defense, and we're battling the Japanese, and we're battling the Germans, and we're trying to win this war, and we're just doing what we're told. So Kerr-McGee had a process where it was enriching the uranium, I believe, and it the byproduct was this dust called thorium, which is an element. It's a heavy element. So they, and it would come out as like dust, as like dirt. So rather than taking the thorium and putting it in barrels and burying it underground for, you know, 1,000 billion years or whatever it had to be until it was dangerous, they found out that plants grow real good in this stuff. And so they were giving it away to the people of West Chicago to put in their gardens. And West Chicago had a really high rate of brain cancer. And somebody actually went out and bought stock in Kerr-McGee so that they could get, because Kerr-McGee said it didn't have the money to clean up all this thorium that they had given away that they now know is radioactive and dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody in West Chicago had the bright idea of buying stock in the company so that they could get their earnings reports. And they would go and they'd say, look, here's the money.
Wow.
Clean it up now. And so they brought this to suit. And sure enough, Kerr-McGee came in. And for about five or 5, maybe even 10 years while I was living there, many front yards were dug down like 20, 30 feet. And they were taking all this dirt out of their and putting it on trains and taking it to Utah where they were storing it to get rid of the thorium. So there are things that you can do to make these changes. You don't have to live with, you know, stuff that's going to give you brain cancer.
Right. You know, Alex Jones, he talks a lot about the fluoride in the water, but he always filters out the spiritual angle. And it's a big thing in the conspiracy community is talking about the pineal gland and the idea that fluoride is the real purpose of it. The real reason it's in our water is to calcify the pineal. And you wrote a little bit about that in one of your articles, Fluoride as a Chemical Weapon in Spirit for Spiritual Warfare. But, you know, you kind of, when you wrote that, you kind of presented it as science fiction, but you were a little facetious at the end saying this could never happen in the real world, right? But do you think there is truth to that story, or is it just something you heard that you think sounds good and you rewrote it?
Yeah, okay. I've been a spiritual person all my life. I meditate. I try my best to maintain contacts in my own way with God and with the spirits and with spiritual stuff. And I never really understood the physiology of spirituality, that there is a spiritual a physiology, that there is reasons why we should eat in a certain way. And so I think that, yeah, after more and more studying, and I know you call yourself the Higher Side Chat. True. So there's the, I believe it's called DMT.
True.
Which is an hallucinogen, and the human brain produces it. And it produces it, my understanding is, through the pineal gland. And so if I'm able to induce a state of deep meditation where I can go and discover a whole nother reality. And if we're all able to do that, if we have a planet full of you know, a billion of us or 2 billion of us, then all of a sudden, a lot of people that are making a lot of money selling material things and you know, a lot of just garbage, not to mention all kinds of truths that we might, you know, we would otherwise have philosophical arguments over, discovering all these truths. A lot of people in power would no longer be in power.
Agreed.
Would no longer be able to maintain their control over humanity. And so it would behoove them to do something like that. So yeah, I don't think that that this is done by accident. I actually believe that I listen to David Icke a lot, and some of what he says about you know, when you go real deep into the rabbit hole, and he talks about reptilians and things like that, some of these things, they make a lot of sense. If you just, you know, you start thinking about them. Now, I can't prove any of it.
Right. I tend to think of that even just in terms of DNA. Like, even if there's just bloodlines that know and teach their children, hey, we are different. We are part of an alien race that came here a long time ago, and we've been working this system for a while now, and our systems of slavery have just gotten more advanced, and now they involve this green paper. And
right.
While everyone does that, we do this over here.
Right. And so you don't even have to take it to the aliens if you don't want to.
Right. I mean, well, essentially it's the same thing. It's just, is it really important if they shapeshift into reptiles or not? I mean, I would hope that they do, because that'd be pretty cool to see. But at the same time, I don't like to argue that point back and forth, because it's irrelevant, really. But it's all just... It just makes it harder for the programming to really be broken, because people latch onto that and they're just like, oh, this is all bullshit.
Right. And then and you're right, when you talk about royalty and bloodlines, everybody knows that they're there. And it's very easy. You only have to go back maybe 200 or 300 years, and you see that they believed that they had the right to rule over you. That was what the American Revolution was all about. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to go to the alien spot. But you can say that in a lot of ways, their thinking, the people, the royalty who are still very rich, still very influential, still powerful, and their thinking is alien to the thinking of the common man who wants to be free and be able to own his own property.
True. I mean, I think if you ask anybody globally, just an average citizen, what they want, they're like, well, I want enough for me and my friends and family to be comfortable. I want everybody to be happy. I want world peace. I mean, you're going to hear that time and time again, yet there is no world peace, but we are supposed to be electing representatives of what we want. And, so, you know, clearly that's all you have to, you only have to go that far to really draw out the idea that there's a conspiracy underway.
And I think that, with the vast majority of common folk do just want to be comfortable, just want to, you know, live. So they're not being greedy, but it's this very small minority at the top that rules. Those are the greedy ones, and they're not necessarily greedy for money and wanting to live comfortably. They're greedy for power and for it seems to me that they want to be worshipped, that they, you know, I mean, you know, I imagine they get off on having all these servants around and everybody, you know, bowing down to them. Like,
it's a control thing.
Right. And well, that's what they are, is control freaks. So, yeah. And, you know, they think that that's respect. And a lot of times it's just fear, or it's because you're paying me.
True.
You know, it has nothing to do with respect. True respect is earned through love, I think.
Well said.
True respect is a mutual respect. And I don't think that the people at the top have a respect for us.
No. That should be clear. I mean, and you can't trust someone who treats you like that. I mean, how could I trust a government that has admitted using its own citizens as guinea pigs for, like, tests on LSD and radiation, like you mentioned?
Syphilis.
You know?
Yeah.
I even have friends that come out of the military today saying that they were given shots with no explanation of what it is or why. I mean, that's nuts. It's the same stuff still going on.
And these are our soldiers. These are the people that we're supposed to have the utmost respect for. These are the people that are supposedly going out there and protecting our freedoms and fighting for our way of life. And yet they get no respect from the people at the top of the chain, of the food chain.
Right. I mean, they are used as guinea pigs, but I just feel like the whole theme of support the troops is really just a propaganda to support the mission. In mainstream society, you know, it's hard to really separate those two. And I just think, you know, you should know. I knew at 18 that signing up to go shoot some people I didn't know was a bad idea. Like, I kind of feel like everyone should know. If you didn't know and you put yourself in harm's way just to be a soldier for corrupt leaders, I mean, I don't think that's noble.
No, neither do I. And you're right. I do believe that the support the troop things is a propaganda.
I mean, you might as well be a hitman in the mafia. But, and do we respect them?
Right. But, you know, I'm talking about, like I said, supposedly these are the people that are supposed to get the highest amount of respect.
Right.
You know, especially according to the people that are spreading the propaganda.
Very true. By their own, you know,
right.
By their own message there.
Corrupt. And it just goes to show. And here you can look at the Ron Paul, what happened to him in terms of the Republican nomination, mm-hmm. where, I mean, the very first things that happened to him during this year is they lied. And said he didn't win New Hampshire, he didn't win Iowa when he was winning those things. Mm-hmm. And if Karl Rove, I believe it was Karl Rove, hadn't gotten out there and lied about that, then people who, you don't care and don't follow politics and are just there once every 4 years to vote for the president would have started saying, hey, you know, let's look at what this guy has to say. And you can't have that. They can't have people being free. They can't have people saying, no, I want to determine my own fate. They can't have people going, you know what? Taxes are theft. You guys are just extorting me. If that starts happening in large enough numbers, they're finished. The Federal Reserve's finished. They're all done.
Right. Well, I mean, on the subject of Ron Paul, let's talk about Alan Wassler and the open letter that he wrote, which you responded to, which also got picked up by Alex Jones.
Yeah, that was my first big, really huge blog, and, yeah. And a lot of people saw that and started complimenting me and how I was saying the things that they would have liked to have said.
Mm-hmm. So what happened there? What did Alan Wassler write?
Well, he was really easy to pick apart. He said that the polls were fixed, and I'm like, look, it's your poll.
Right. And for those who don't know, he works for CNBC.
Right.
And this is in regards to just one of their post-debate polls.
Right. And so he said, well, the Ron Paul people got together and decided to game the poll, and they all, and I'm like, going, anybody could have done that. If any of the other candidates had people out there that felt as strongly about them as the Ron Paul people felt about Ron Paul, anybody could have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And I pointed that out. He said that it was like coming into a room and, you know, being shouted down. And I'm like going, well, yeah, you're coming into the room that Ron Paul that's populated by Ron Paul people. Of course you're going to have it shouted down. Mm-hmm. It was just, this guy was just so blatantly trying to make Ron Paul.
To belittle the following he has, really. He's just very condescending and smug.
Right, right. And, you know, I pointed all that out. And I tried to be, actually tried to be nice about it. But sometimes when you try to be nice and you're sarcastic, I really lambasted him. And I think that a lot of people saw that and they thought I did a good job. So
yeah, I liked it. You know, there's a lot of crossover between the conspiracy community and Ron Paul, but I think Ron Paul has some stances that are really concerning, mainly his removal of restrictions on corporations and Wall Street. I mean, it just seems like those are the people we need to restrict. And yes, he wants to get rid of the Federal Reserve and end the wars, and those things are great. But I still think within this political structure, supporting Ron Paul is kind of just a way to pacify the movement.
Well, there's things about Ron Paul that I would argue with too, but he has opened a lot of eyes. And when it comes to corporations, personally, I don't think that corporations should be allowed to exist.
Agreed.
Corporations are nothing but protection from the government for a company.
Right. And there's no one to hold accountable.
Right. And no one is held accountable. So it seems to me if you want to do business in this country, in the United States of America, you're going to have to assume a certain amount of risk. And that risk should be things like, oh, I don't know, if you're a drug company and your shot is found to cause Guillain-Barré syndrome and people die from it, maybe you should go to jail. Or, you know, if there's that risk that should happen, then you should be required to tell anybody taking that shot, hey, there's a chance that you might get Guillain-Barré syndrome or that you might die from taking the shot. Take mm-hmm. that into consideration before you make your decision, because I am going to make you sign a piece of paper that says you're not going to sue me if your child dies, right, or if you die.
Or I mean, there's also a lot of cases of corporations doing something they know is morally wrong because it's more profitable, and then paying the fines, which are massive, but they pale in comparison to the profits.
Which was what happened with the deep horizon.
Right. And also, you know, aspirin, they got caught sending contaminated blood, HIV contaminated blood, to Australia and Europe, knowing that, because there's documents that show they pulled it from the U.S., but they had to dump it somewhere. And if an individual did that, they would not be able to run a company anymore.
Right. And because it's an LLC, the liability is limited. Mm-hmm. And the liability is usually just fiscal. There's, you know, has nothing to do with whether, I mean, especially if you can prove intention, that's murder.
Right. And those are the people we trust to relieve our headaches.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't know. I think marijuana, especially certain brands of marijuana, would probably be better at relieving your headache.
Hey, I haven't had a headache all morning.
There you go.
Great. But another thing you wrote about that I wanted to talk about on the air was this open letter to my alien friends visiting Earth. It's basically about the claims of Edgar Mitchell, which, you know, he's been pretty vocal about the idea that he's pretty sure aliens exist. But I mean, right, as vocal as he could be without maybe drawing too much unwanted attention. But tell us a little bit about Edgar Mitchell and that piece you wrote.
Well, yeah, I don't know that much about Edgar Mitchell, but I just remember that I read that he had come out and was talking about just what you said. Mm-hmm. And hey, he's an astronaut. So finally, this astronaut is coming out and saying, and I believe Buzz Aldrin also came out and said something. But this isn't widely reported. And, you know, since I was a kid, reports of alien sightings of UFOs, and, you know, I mean, back in 1947 was Roswell. And so from that point on, through the 50s, so before I was born, there was all kinds of sightings and things being reported in the air. And maybe they were military planes. I don't know. I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But there was a hysteria about UFOs. So during the 60s, when I grew up, they were kind of trying to make people who would say that they saw UFOs or aliens or anything look crazy. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the atmosphere I grew up in. So what you would hear oftentimes is, oh, if there's UFOs, how come, you know, people, responsible people don't, you know, you don't hear from them? Well,
right, because it's always some dumb redneck.
Right, right. Because responsible people would lose their jobs if they, you know, talked about it.
Great point.
There's stories about pilots. They're afraid of losing their jobs. The military people, oh, Lord, what's that radio, that famous radio host who was shot by the cops, shot in the back?
Really?
Yeah. He used to, the Hour of the Time was the name of his show. Oh, he was in the Navy.
Huh.
And he saw a UFO in the Navy, and they brought him in and said, no, you didn't see that. And he's like, yeah, I did. And I'm like, oh, no, you don't understand. You didn't see it. And all of a sudden he said, oh, I get it. Bill Cooper. Bill Cooper was the guy.
Oh, yeah. Bill Cooper. He wrote Beyond the Pale Horse, if I'm not
right,
mistaken.
Right, A Pale Horse, right. I read about half of that book, and then I just couldn't take it anymore. But it does have a lot of interesting information in it. And when somebody of that stature, somebody who was in space, comes out and says, yeah, I believe there are aliens, and I believe they've visited Earth, why aren't the newspapers printing that everywhere?
Right.
It's huge news. So, yeah, there is a conspiracy. The media wants to keep things quiet. They don't want you to know, because they still want you to say, oh, UFOs, nobody with any kind of real expertise has ever seen a UFO. Yeah. And I saw one when I was like 11 years old. I saw one. So
really? What was that like?
It was strange. I was walking home from school, and there was this little park I used to cut across. It was on a corner, so you'd make the diagonal cut and shorten your walk. And I looked up in the sky, and there was this disc. It's probably maybe, I don't know, 3,000 or 4,000 feet, but it's hard to say because you don't know the size of the disc. So I have no idea how big it was. But it was right at about the level where cumulus clouds start to form. And it just all of a sudden, I looked up, I saw it for about 3 or 4 seconds, and it was gone.
And wow.
It was weird. And I said, wow, that was weird. And then I walked home and kind of forgot about it and never really said much about it. Mm-hmm. But it's always, you know, been something that I've seen that, you know, it wasn't an airplane. I know what airplanes look like. It wasn't a balloon. Balloons don't just vanish like that. And it didn't vanish. It you know, flew off real fast. Right. That's what I mean by it vanished. It just, yeah. It went so fast that it, you know, a second it was out of sight.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, you know, we're getting close to the end of the hour, but before we got there, I wanted to let you talk a little bit about some other experiences you had when you were a kid. Some experiences with mind dynamics. Can you tell us, what was Mind Dynamics?
Mind Dynamics was a meditation group. Basically, it was started by a company called Holiday Magic. Holiday Magic was a cleaning company, and they sold cleaners that were biodegradable, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And this was back in 1971. And what they wanted was for their salespeople to use positive thinking to help raise their sales. So they would teach you the power of positive thinking. And through it, Mind Dynamics, which was a meditation, which would do things like improve your memory, remote viewing, this kind of stuff. One of the other things that we used to do was what we call readings on people. And so you would learn to meditate, and there's a method to this meditation that I still use to this day. And then what we had was a group of cards, and there would be people's names on the card. And somebody that you were working with, you would meditate. Somebody that you were working with would look at the card, and you would tell them who that person was, their sex was, their approximate age, and then you would tell them what was wrong with them.
Really?
And it's surprising. It's amazing how accurate we were when we would do this. And these weren't any parlor tricks or anything. This is just you meditating and concentrating and asking the universe to send you this information. And then you would send them light, white light, in an effort to try to heal them. Hmm. And that's what got Mind Dynamics in trouble. Mind Dynamics was basically busted for practicing medicine without a license.
Really?
And so they are defunct now. But through this, I learned the practice of meditation, like I said. And I started contacting beings or consciousness on a different level. Consciousness in another dimension and another plane. Mm-hmm. And I would talk to my guides, and you know, I'm sure you've done a lot of things on guides and stuff like that.
Yeah, I've had people talk to me about them. I've never experienced a guide. I've never sensed a presence. I'm
right.
Waiting.
I'm all right. Well, you actually need to kind of work on it, but I really have a difficulty doing it anymore. Not as clearly as I was doing back then. And what happened is, as I got older, as I started to reach puberty, I started to get a sense that there was a consciousness looking for me, trying to reach out to me, and it started getting me paranoid because I felt nervous. I felt like this wasn't a good presence that was looking for me. And then I was starting to try telekinesis to get things to move. And of course I couldn't do that. Mm-hmm. But then one night I fell out of bed. I was woken up. The bed was shaking. I fell out of bed. I looked at the bed. The bed was maybe 3 or 4 inches off the ground. Mm-hmm. And I totally freaked out. Then the bed kind of slammed to the ground. And I got up. And I said, you know what? I'm not doing it anymore. I'm cutting myself off.
Wow.
And I just stopped meditating. And I stopped even trying anymore because it scared me that much. I was really, really frightened by the experience.
Man. So how did you get set? How did your parents let you get involved with Mind Dynamics? Did they know what was going on?
Yeah. My mom worked for Holiday Magic.
Oh, right on.
And, I would go out and sell their, products. And I'd get quite a bit of business because I was a cute little kid, you know, and here I am knocking at these doors to these young housewives and, oh, look at the cute little boy. Oh, yeah, I'm going to buy something from you. You know how it is.
Of course.
The biggest thing that happened to me was, this was 1971. I was 11 years old. And up until that point, I had asthma very bad. I had to go every 2 weeks for a shot, and I had two types of medicine. I had red medicine, which I'd take every day, and I had yellow medicine, which I would take in case of an asthma attack. Mm-hmm. And when I was a baby, I had an asthma attack that was so bad that I turned blue, and they had to rush me to the hospital. I remember going to the doctor's office, and he would give me oxygen, and he'd tell me I was being launched into outer space, you know, while he was giving me oxygen because I'd have the mask over my face and stuff. So as I progressed through this, and this was the big reason my mom took me, as I progressed through this Mind Dynamics, within a week, I told my mom, you know what? I'm done having asthma. I'm never going to have it again. Sure enough, I did not have another asthma attack until I was 20 years old and in college.
Man. I do think there is something to the power of self-healing. I get the impression that all these things like crystals and making offerings to Jupiter and all these different New Age practices are really just ways to manifest into third dimension reality, a way to project that ability to just heal ourselves. You know, if you put faith in something and then turn, you really do it yourself.
Maybe instead of Jupiter, you should make it out to Zeus. I think they're the same.
Fair. Yeah. I mean, to me, it's all just like, whatever. I mean, I love to hear about it, but you know, Zeus, Jupiter, Jesus, doesn't mean anything to me really, but hey, you know, I think we've hit all the bases, connected all the dots, dumped out all the Kool-Aid, but I mean, is there anything else you wanted to say to the people?
Yeah. Can I talk about my books for a
Absolutely.
Second?
Absolutely.
Okay. I write under the name Matthew Bellotti, and I have 5 eBooks available on Amazon. 3 of them are a trilogy. It's called the Black Blade Trilogy, and book 1 is The Colors of Alberia. Book 2 is The Legacy of the Tariqs. Book 3 is The Power of the Tech. And then I have 2 horrors, one called The Ouijiers and one called The Edge of Sanity. Anyway, give those a look, see, and
sure. Tell us what the overarching theme of the trilogy is, of the fantasy trilogy.
Okay, it takes place on a planet called Alberia, and it's 750 years ago. They were looking for a source of energy, and so they invented this telescope to look into black holes. And the black hole was another dimension inside the black hole, and it follows the beam back to the planet, and infuses the planet with its own kind of magical science, I guess, that is in that other dimension. Mm-hmm. So these manifest in different colors, and different colors have different powers. And then there's the glowing colors that are the colors that are life, and then there's the dark colors, which are colors that are death. And different people control the light colors, and they're battling the dark colors.
Nice. That sounds interesting. Very cool. Well, there you have it, people. Chandra Blessman, thanks for being here, sir. Definitely check out ChandraBlessman.com if you're interested in the books and the articles that he writes. Any last wise words for the people of the Higher Side Chats?
Thank you very much for having me. I very much appreciate this interview, and it's cool.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. All right, man, have a good day.
You too.
Another one in the bag. Thanks for listening, people. Please go to thehiresidechats.com and click on the slide to nominate us for a couple of the award shows going on right now. It would mean a lot to me. It's a validation that I crave and need. Also, conspiracies.net for all your conspiracy clothing needs. Here's a great song by a guy that's just been brought to my attention, Rev Delek. It's called We Will Win. And 90 days before the end of 2012, I fucking hope he's right. Rev Delek, everybody. Keep it clean just like a hospital. Those who make a peaceful movement impossible make a violent revolution inevitable. And we know so much that your head will explode, cause we're internet years ahead of you folks. So you insult yourself and we're the butt of your jokes. Go and drink your fluoride and eat GMO. Time to rise together like water in stormy weather. There's a war going on and nobody gives an effort. We don't mean to endeavor to end your mission for cheddar, but you've been killing our relas and we ain't having that. Hell no. Caught you every time you fell off, but now we're letting go. It's the last time you sell us out, now you lost control. When I check this microphone, all the people start to roll. Time to let these fuckers know, we won't take this shit no more. We will win, we will win, we will win. Machine. People die for the American dream, and I am not up on that team, but they make it look insane like I promoted overseas. And I ain't never heard a thing, no I ain't never heard a thing, but I've been cursed with this disease called freedom. Congress committing treason, reason protesters on the corner speaking, bleeding, leaking truth from legion, still screaming don't eat what the media's been feeding. They lie to you, but who do you believe in? That fight evil, the peaceful, the ones that stand up for the rights, even if it's illegal. Shedding blood like true patriots, why you suckers get your slave check? The head corporations, why you fuckers dig your grave debt? If you don't pay your bank debt, you do not exist. Welcome to the bank with your food for the rich. Time to let them know you're pissed. If you're with me, pump your fist. Show solidarity with all who resist. We will win. We will win. We will win. The option now, we came too far, no opting out. It's time to take this monster down. The problem is your problem now. Don't act like you don't know what it's about. You heard the sound of 50 million people crying out. I give a fuck about a job when kids are dying for a god and your bank account is fraud. There's some killers at large and they're in offices. Commander-in-chief of this process when the coffin's dispensed. We need to take them over. These snakes are striking like a cobra. Your vote don't mean shit to La Costa Nostra vultures. Oppose of the opposer and never be the soldier. Just remember what I told you and try to hold composure. It ain't over till it's over, but you can try to lock us down. Roll over your bulldozer, cause you can never knock us down. Because we love the future, we will all stand our grounds. And you ain't got nothing to worry about. We will win, we will win.